Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, devotees, this morning we will read just a short reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. And we're going to read verse 23. Tatra Gandharvam Akarnya Divyamargam Anoharam Visismyo Raja Putraste Mridanga Panavad Yano. Translation. The sons of the king became very much amazed when they heard vibrations from various drums and kettle drums, along with other orderly musical sounds pleasing to the ear. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In addition to the various flowers and living entities about the lake, there were also many musical vibrations. The void of the impersonalists, which has no variegatedness, is not at all pleasing compared with such a scene. Actually, one has to attain the perfection of Satchitananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Because the impersonalists deny these varieties of creation, they cannot actually enjoy transcendental bliss. The place where the Prachetas arrived was the abode of Lord Shiva. Impersonalists are generally worshippers of Lord Shiva, but Lord Shiva is never without variety in his abode. Thus, wherever one goes, whether to the planet of Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, or Lord Brahma, there is variety to be enjoyed by persons full in knowledge and bliss. I'll read the verse again. Tatra Gandharvam Akarnya Divyamargam Anoharam Visismyo Rajaputraste Mridanga Panavadyano. The sons of the king became very much amazed when they heard vibrations from various drums and kettle drums, along with other orderly musical sounds pleasing to the ear. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastyachyade Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adigora Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Vanchakalpaturibhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Padidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. Devotees of ISKCON Tongat and other areas. So this is part of the story of the Prachetas. It's maybe not as well known a story as some of the other stories in Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's very nice and it's very interesting. And there are all sorts of different interesting little perspectives that come up in the course of the narration. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, he's very expert. He's so expert in bringing out all different perspectives, clarifying those which might be easier to recognize, but also bringing out perspectives which we might not have noticed in our own just personal reading of the same parts of the literature. So this is like that. There's some interesting points here. Particularly Prabhupada in the purport is, or specifically even, is contrasting the nature of the impersonalists with the nature of the personalists. There's such a huge difference. Although many people, and of course not so many people are interested in these types of ideas, but amongst those who are interested, there are many who feel that doesn't really matter, impersonal or personal, as you like. Yes, because it's all one, which means they're impersonalists. Even though they, you know, they're not knowledgeable and they don't deny the personal aspect per se, but at the same time, just the fact that they feel it doesn't really matter, personal, impersonal idea, means they're impersonalists. And impersonalism is really, it's bad. It's like a curse, actually. It's really like a curse. In fact, on Sunday, we were in Vilnius, Lithuania, for the Sunday program. And we read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, verse 1, in which Arjuna questions Krishna that which is better? What is better, to be an impersonalist or to be a personalist? It's just the question which is presented in that verse. But then Lord Krishna goes on over the next few verses to point out that personalism is much better. Not just much better, but impersonalism is just, it's like a dead-end street. Not just like a dead-end street, it really is a dead-end street. We were driving over here last night, yesterday afternoon, and as we turned, as we're about to turn, right around that point from the Higginson Highway into the coastal highway to come up here, just, I think, on the Higginson Highway, if I remember correctly, was a poster. And Swami Abhed Ananda, who is the head of the Chinmaya Mission, I just happened to look at the poster, is doing a program of some sort based on Valmiki Ramayana. And there's the picture of, not a picture of Sita and Ram, who are the subjects of the whatever program, but of Swami Abhedananda, his head, basically. And on his head, one could see quite prominently the three-lined tilak, horizontal. We have the vertical. Three-line tilak, which means, it's kind of broad, even, you could say, in what it means. But first and foremost, it's the tilak of followers of Lord Shiva. And second of all, in practically all cases, if not actually all, they're impersonalists also. In other words, people who don't exactly follow Lord Shiva, but they're just impersonalists, they also wear it. So I thought you and I saw that little sign there, little poster as we're just coming to the end of the Higginson Highway. And I thought, yes, right. Here he is. The impersonalist. Follower at best, at the most personal, a follower of Lord Shiva. And what's Lord Shiva got to do with the Valmiki Ramayana? I really don't know. But not just at worst, but just in general, the sign of an impersonalist is going to now read about or make some presentation, and it's taken so seriously they've paid money to advertise it, about the Valmiki Ramayana. Well, you know, you could sort of, my thoughts could be encapsulated just by saying, it's Kali Yuga. That's kind of, says it all in a sense. Meaning it's really Kali Yuga actually. So this, yeah, here, the actual previous verse which I was going to read, but I just, you know, I just opened the book, literally. Closed my eyes and opened the book here and just thought, I'm just going to read whatever it is. And I thought of reading, this is verse 23 we've read. I thought of reading 22 because it's nice. But then the Sanskrit is over on the previous page, so I thought I'll stick to what's on this page. But the previous verse and purport are talking about the trees and creepers at this place which is, it's basically a very beautiful lake and the surroundings of the lake. And actually it's Mount Kailash. It is the abode of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, I guess, is about to, yes, he is, he's about to come forward and meet the Prachetas. But there, the previous verse says, it's very nice, there were various trees and creepers on all sides of the lakes, and there were mad bumblebees humming about them. Doesn't mean psychotic bumblebees. It just means they were very, like, sort of hyped up about the flowers and, you know, the nectar there. Yes. And then the verse says, in this situation with the bees buzzing around them just like mad, as we say sometimes, the bees appeared to be very jolly. I mean, the trees, the bees were sort of, you know, hyper ecstatic, and the trees appeared very jolly. And Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that trees and creepers are also different types of living beings. When bumblebees come upon trees and creepers to collect honey, certainly such plants become very happy. I suspect we may not have thought about that before, ever. I don't know, but I suspect maybe some of you have thought of it. But it's a very interesting little perspective, isn't it? Yes, and it's a very non-impersonal perspective. It's very non-impersonal. It's very personal. That these trees and flowering plants, they are persons and they have feelings. And this type of situation for them is just the best. Just wonderful. Wonderful situation. This is very personal. And then, of course, in the purport here of this particular verse we're reading, 23, Prabhupada you know, a little extensively brings out certain points about the impersonalists, what they experience if they become successful, which is an extremely big if, because generally they don't, actually. But if they do, what is their experience compared to that of the personalists? Yes. So the other day, as we mentioned Sunday, we were in Vilnius, Lithuania, and we tried to bring out the fact that impersonalism is not just sort of like some people, well, it's not just like people, some people think that it's just, you know, it doesn't really matter, personal or impersonal, it's just another perspective on the same thing. It's not a matter of that. But actually, impersonalism is extremely dangerous. Full stop. And notice I didn't just say dangerous spiritually, just dangerous. Full stop. In life. In life. There are many heavy implications just in day-to-day life of impersonalism. And let's just mention a couple now, and then you can think about it. But impersonalism, of course, maybe you know that when Srila Prabhupada first started preaching in New York, he was giving classes Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and occasionally the subject of impersonal or personal would come up. And Prabhupada would invariably launch into a heavy, you know, like strong, you could say, criticism, pointing out the shortcomings, faults, and dangers of impersonalism. And he would become worked up about it. A little like the bees, just, you know. He would really become worked up about it. More than he'd become, I mean, sometimes at least, more than he'd become worked up about other things, which he would be talking about. And so, one day, I don't know if it's in the Lilamrita or where I read it exactly, but I read it quite some years ago. One day, these very new devotees, most of them are not following the regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds. Some of them may be just not following any regulative principles and not chanting at all. But they had some attraction and they were coming. So a little discussion arose that, why is it that Swamiji, they called him Swamiji then, why is it that Swamiji gets so worked up about these impersonalists? I mean, what's the deal? Even, maybe it's in Lilamrita again, I forget where I read it, but I read it not so long ago, that it may have been Kirtan Ananda, but it was somebody who was a little more into it at that point than many of the other hippie types. When Prabhupada brought up this point, he asked Prabhupada, what's wrong? Yes, he asked Prabhupada, what's wrong with the impersonalists? You know, they're pretty nice. It seems quite closely related to us. It was the wrong question. Sometimes people ask the wrong question. But anyway, when they're having this little discussion, one devotee suggested, he said, well, you know, Swamiji is an old man. And when people get old, they become touchy, irritable. And, you know, yeah, you got to watch out when you're dealing with them. Is that somebody's? telephone. So, okay. So Swamiji is an old man, and old people become irritable, and, you know, you have to kind of be careful as you deal with them, not to say the wrong thing. And so that devotee or person continued that maybe he had some bad experience with one of these impersonalists, you know, like some big argument about something like that. And now he's got a bee under his bonnet. And whenever it comes up, it just, whoa, it just stirs something in his irritable, elderly nature. But that was not the case. Let me, like I said, just give a couple of examples of the pernicious, you could say, or at least say very bad and even dangerous, subtle effects, side effects, that people, even devotees, might not recognize, but they definitely are, of impersonalism. What about abortion? What does abortion mean? You know, each one of us sitting here, I mean, every human being who's living on this planet, went through a stage of development at which, according to current day laws and just the feelings of many people, even educated people in the Western world, that it's fine, it's not a problem, it's even good for a child to be aborted. Even one devotee, you may know Hari Sori Prabhu, he told me many years ago that when he turned on his 21st birthday, on the day, his mother's mother, his maternal grandmother, said, you know, I've waited till now to tell you this, but I decided on this day to tell you. When your mother, my daughter, was pregnant with you, she wanted to have an abortion. She wanted to abort you. But I convinced her not to. And now he's, you know, so he got to live out a full life. And he said it really changed his perspective on his mother, who he had previously considered, you know, I mean, you know, his mother, as people think. Yeah. So abortion, what does it mean in principle? In principle, it means that this person, not developed, but still person, this person is not sufficiently a person to be treated in a decent way at all. I mean, you know, in fact, is so much not a real person that we can murder, which is pretty much the worst of all crimes. We can do it and be happy at the end, that, you know, good work. When they made abortion legal in Ireland just a matter of a few months ago, maybe you heard about that, because it's a very Catholic country and it was illegal. It was completely illegal. So they made it legal. It was a whole thing, a referendum in the entire country. All the people sort of voted, and the majority wanted it to be legal. And I saw photographs of the women celebrating when the news came out. And it was like, this is the best thing that ever happened to us. Wow! They're just literally dancing in the streets. But it's impersonalism. It's not that subtle when you think about it, but that's exactly what it is. That this person is not enough of a person to be taken seriously at all, to even be really considered at all. So, but it's a person. He or she is a person. Yeah. So the actual personal nature of the person has been overlooked. It's impersonalism. What about, I mean, you can just consider the other related isms, sexism. You know, not when I was young, it was before that, but say 100 years ago, as far as I can recall, it was up to about 1920-something, women could not vote. At least in England, they couldn't vote. I don't know about the rest of the world. I suspect the rest of the world. But at least in England, women couldn't vote. Why? Because they're not sufficiently persons, you know, to be given that sort of responsibility. You know, pat them on the head, good girl, good girl. Keep them around to wash your clothes and keep the house clean, you know, and have children with, and cook. It's a type of impersonalism, actually. It's a type of impersonalism. Racism. It's just exactly the same idea. These people are just not up to it. They're just not up to the real standard of being real people. So, you know, flag them away in one way or another. These are all effects of impersonalism. What about speciesism? Only devotees can understand that. That all different species of life must be respected as actually our brothers and sisters, because they are. And there is no excuse. I mean, at least put it this way, it's only under very extraordinary circumstances where there could be an excuse to abuse them. Yeah. You know, I know famous story, but I was there present personally, and I've told it numerous times. Prabhupada in Bhaktivedanta Manor and the temple president from Edinburgh, in the questions time after class, said, Prabhupada, in our temple in Edinburgh, we've got many rats. Is it all right if we kill the rats? And Prabhupada said, if you kill the rats, you should be killed. And the temple president didn't get it. And he continued the same question, but Prabhupada, you know, sometimes they're dangerous and, you know, they carry disease and all these types of things, and there's lots of them. So is it all right if we kill the rats? And Prabhupada's answer was, if you kill the rats, you should be killed. Kind of says it all, really. Even someone asked him about cockroaches. Yeah, another time. You can look it up. And Prabhupada said, no, can't kill them. But then later Prabhupada said, you know, if it reaches a certain point, then it may be, you know, you may be forced to do something, but not that it's fine, or it's just normal, or everything's okay. It's impersonalism. It's impersonalism. You know, the struggle, you know, sort of a struggle Prabhupada went through to save one of the trees in the driveway of the Juhu Temple. It was a multi-stage sort of negotiation with the building planning department of the Bombay municipality. We don't want to cut down this tree to allow for a big, like, double lane driveway into the temple. And eventually the devotee who was dealing with the city, well, Prabhupada told the devotee, tell them, it is against our religion to cut down trees. Because it is. It's kind of a slightly different way of looking at it, but that's what it ends up being. And so they were allowed to not cut down the tree, and the driveway was built around the tree, and it's still there. And Giriraj Maharaj actually wrote an offering to Prabhupada some years ago, in which he made the point that when you visit Juhu, go and have a look at the tree, and know that Srila Prabhupada saved the life of this tree. That's personalism. But, you know, cut down the tree, all this sort of thing. It's the influence of impersonalism. So actually impersonalism is very bad and very dangerous, and it undermines just day-to-day life. What to speak of amongst those who are interested in spiritual things, and what path of spiritual life should I take? Yeah, it's kind of an all-encompassing aspect of life in this world. So you can meditate on that. And I was present, I think I was present anyway, maybe I wasn't, but Prabhupada was asked. He'd been talking about this type of thing. And Prabhupada was asked, does it hurt the grass when we walk on it? And Prabhupada said, yes. And Prabhupada said, therefore, you should never walk on the grass unless you're walking for Krishna. And it's part of your devotional service, you know, like, yeah. Extremely personal, extremely personal. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. So we have to start getting mobile, actually.